Blog Talk Radio.
It's showtime.
Greetings and welcome to Sight and Vision Disability and Senior Talk Radio Show, a show about disability rights, disability services, and your disability dollar. Your voice and advocate, voice your concerns, voice your opinion, but please let your voice be heard. Our mission is to bring to you the people, the places, and the things that can change your life for the better, which is inclusion into society, living more independently in your home and in your community. America, welcome to Sight and Vision Disability and Senior Talk Radio Show. I am your host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor, your friendly neighborhood networker. Our motto is increase your network and you'll increase your net worth. And behind microphone number two, we have the hostess with the mostest, Miss Renee. Again, my listening audience, welcome to Sight and Vision Disability and Senior Talk Radio Show. Again, I am your host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor. Although I've been blind for more than 55 years, I was a lad of 13 in a firecracker, which we call a cherry bomb in the DMV, exploded in my face and blinded me in both eyes. But in spite of that, every morning I raise, I feel blessed, highly favored, and I know God is good. Greetings, and how are you today, Miss Renee?
Reverend Ray, I am great also. We got a little weather cooling off kind of thing, and we sort of needed it. But, you know, a little concern about our friends out in Hawaii, and even Southern California now is looking at some bad storms. So, you know, just being mindful that there are other people that are suffering in other parts of the states right now.
Yeah, and you know that Hawaii is, we have to pray for them, but
Rev,
it's just something special to my heart.
Oh,
because
Rev,
on my wife's 50th day, on 50th, huh?
Okay,
hello?
Well, we can't hear the Rev right now,
you,
so a little technical difficulty. I don't know if a windstorm blew.
You can't hear me? Miss Renee, I can hear you. You can't hear me? Huh. She can't hear me. I can hear her.
I hope our guest is still there. We're having some technical difficulties. Okay.
I called back in. Do you hear me now, Miss Renee?
I have you. I have you on, and
okay,
our guest is still on. So I think we're
alrighty,
in fine shape. Apparently,
okay,
talking about hurricanes in California upset the board. So that's what happened. But, Rev, let me tell you who our guest is. Our guest is Libra Robinson. She is a mom. She's an entrepreneur. And did I mention she is blind? Blindness is just one aspect of the woman that we are highlighting today. And so we want to welcome Libra Robinson. Welcome, Libra.
Welcome,
thank
Miss
you so
Libra.
Much.
Welcome, welcome, Miss
thank
Libra.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, more than welcome. And we have a little history with Miss Libra because when we were doing the show at WOL in 2013, Miss Libra and another young lady named Dana had a segment on the show called What was the girl talk or something?
It was Let's Talk with Libra and Dana.
Oh, okay. But the young ladies was talking, and there was a nice spice to the show. So welcome again, Libra. So Libra, would you just tell us a little bit about yourself that the audience would like to know? And then we're going to get into some Q&A.
Okay. Well, Thank you so much. Again, my name is Libra Robinson. I am a native Washingtonian. I have
Yay!
One child, and as Mrs. Razor stated, I am a blind woman. I'm also an entrepreneur. That's about it.
Well, there's more to it to you than that, so we're going to explore some of that. So, Ms. Renee, would you start off with some of the questioning that we would like the audience to know about Ms. Libra?
Well, I know you're a native Washingtonian, and native Washingtonians are so proud of that. So is your family from here, and how many siblings did you have? What kind of childhood did you have in Washington, D.C. back in the 80s, 70s?
80s. So, yes, so I'm born here. I have several siblings. I have four sisters, two brothers. And growing up in Washington, D.C. was something. I went to Emory Elementary School, as well as Shaw and Bell Multicultural High School. With my mother, it's just me and my sister Sherry. So I mainly, and we were 14 years apart, so she's like my little friend, and I love her very much. I have older sisters and brothers that are, and one that's a little younger than me. But growing up in Washington, D.C., we're just like anyone else. We all love the Redskins. And, I had a pretty good childhood. I think I did.
So
I was
now
not
you
born
said you
blind,
went...
however. I lost my vision later on in life.
And we're going to talk about that in a little bit. Now, you said you went to Bell Multicultural, so did you have some educational or career goals for yourself?
Yes. My career goal was to be a cosmetologist. I was the friend on the block that did everyone's hair. I just loved it. I enjoyed it. I did my own. So my career goal was really to be a hairstylist. But unfortunately, that did not happen. However, my immediate family still allowed me to cut, curl, perm their hair. But, of course, being visually impaired, that was not going to be conducive with working in a shop, you know, with the chemicals and things of that nature. So, but I still continue to do it. I still like it now, and I do my own hair as well.
Well, and you always look great. Now, when did you learn that you might there might be a problem with your sight?
Well, that's very funny because my condition, which I found out later, is called pseudotumor cerebri, and which affects your optic nerve. You know what happened is it came on so gradually that initially I thought I needed glasses. So we just went to different ophthalmologists, just to, you know, get fitted for glasses. I was told I had astigmatism, things of that nature. And so they would give me these glasses where one lens was thin, one lens was thick. And, you know, I was a woman of 18 by then. So it was like, but I still said I'd rather see. Long as the frame was cute, I looked all right, so I chose that. But I noticed gradually that I became very light sensitive. I started to get excruciating headaches, and I would go to the doctor, you know, the regular emergency room and things of that nature, and they didn't know what was wrong. And, of course, sometimes in the medical field when they don't know what's wrong, they say it's you. Like you're making up these symptoms and things of that nature. And so this went on from, I would say, a span of December to May. And in that 6 months or so span, I lost pretty much the majority of my vision until my godmother, Miss Avis Johnson, said, now something is wrong. You know, you're losing vision, you're losing weight, you're sick. So she took me to the eye clinic. At Washington Hospital Center. And, oh, my goodness, soon as the doctor dilated my eyes and looked in, he said, we have to admit you immediately because in a few days you're going to wake up and you're not going to be able to see at all. And it was a shock to me. And They admitted me that day. The next day I had what is called decompression surgery. That is when I was diagnosed with the pseudotumor cerebri. And at that time they told me that it was a rare eye condition, mainly among African-American women. That's why a lot of the doctors didn't catch it. They said if they would have caught it ahead of time, then they could have really saved the majority of my vision. I couldn't dwell on that then because they were saving it now. So I went in on May 17th, which is the day I always remember, and I did not leave that hospital until early July. So that
wow.
was different for me and my family. But the doctors there were very good to me and really explained, you know, that I pretty much had lost my vision really in a matter of 6 months, which was something. But I had a child by then, so I had to go home and just resume. And that was the unfortunate part because I didn't know anything about any services. I just was sent home.
So what was your reaction to hearing that you are now going to be, and did they use the term legally blind or blind? How did they describe your condition to you?
Well, that's what they told me, that I was legally blind, but they gave me hope upon hope that, you know, it might come back. You know, it may come back, but you won't lose any more vision. So every year, I promise you, every year on May 17th, this is the year. This is when it's going to come back, Christmas. It's going to come back on Christmas morning, Thanksgiving. So, you know, you just keep hope alive, as it were. And in the meantime, I just pretended that I could see. I faked it a little bit. I faked it a lot of it. Because I just really didn't have any other alternative. I didn't know about a white cane or any services of that nature. Did not want anyone to know that I was visually impaired. That's a stigma within itself. So a lot of times I just faked it, and I really couldn't go places by myself. So I would always have someone with me, but it would be a ruse just for them to come with me. But I really didn't feel comfortable moving around by myself. And it was uncomfortable because you can't see. You know, a lot of mine was affected with my central vision. So, you know, you have to look forward. And then quirky me, I realized why they were giving me two different types of lenses, because one eye is nearsighted and one eye is farsighted. So you figure that out with low central vision. It's like, where am I? You know, so, yeah, but, yeah.
Let me ask you this. I'm sorry.
No, go. I'm
Okay, so let me ask you this. Myself being a gentleman that blind and lost my sight early on when I was 13, and as I reached, you know, 18 and all, and you had responsibility. You was a mother at that point. So in terms of taking care of yourself, you just become blind. You don't have the skills. You don't have – how was that? And obviously you must have a supporting family or somebody to help you.
Well, that is true. I did have a supportive family. Of course, my son's father was around, my mother. But I just went home and took all my responsibilities. I want to remind you that my mom was a single mom, and I said it was just me and my little sister. And she was a special police officer, and so she worked the graveyard shift. So my job was taking care of my little sister and then my son. So when I went home, I had to resume my responsibilities. By the grace of God, I could see well enough to be able to do some of the things that I used to do. But a lot of times I would depend on the children sometimes. Like my little sister was very good with, she would.
Kind of loud, Miss Renee. Is that a break, Miss Renee?
It is, but we're just having a little bit of technical difficulties on the board. I am so sorry.
Oh, All right, Miss Libra, as you know, when we hear that sound, we have to take a break. We have to pay some bills, pay people like Miss Renee and them for they don't be out striking like the people in Hollywood and stuff, because I ain't got that kind of money to pay her. So we're going to take a break and be back with Miss Libra on the other side to resume her special story.
Well, sorry about that. Technical things do happen. You are listening to Sight and Vision Disability and Senior Talk Radio. We are heard here every Friday at 3 o'clock p.m. Are you looking for an active older adult group that cares about all of the issues facing older adults? Check out AARP 939 of Suitland, Maryland, the only chapter in Prince George's County. President Catherine Williamson invites you to join her and many of your neighbors and friends. They meet the first Tuesday of every month at 12 o'clock noon at the Knights of Columbus, and that's located at 3611 Seward Road, Forestville, Maryland. The next meeting is Tuesday, the 5th of September at the Knights of Columbus. Again, that address is 3611 Seward Road. Need more info? Email them at aarp939@yahoo.com. That's aarp939@yahoo.com. Back to our host, Reverend Ray, and our special guest, Libra Robinson. Libra, if you would give the rest of that answer again, I think it got lost in the sauce because of the music.
Oh, I think I was just saying that he asked me how did I continue to go home, especially with a little one. I just said I had to go home and just pick up from where I left off and just continue to do it. Like I was saying to my little sister, she was very instrumental in just being a nice little helper, you know. But I just had to go home and resume all of my responsibilities.
Wow.
You know,
I
learned the term yesterday, pretty privilege. Now, by any standard, you are a very pretty girl. Now, the inference is that there is an aura surrounding pretty girls and only good things happen to them. How could this happen to you? Did you ever think that?
No. I never thought, how could this happen to me? No, I just, you know, when things happen, sometimes you don't have time to think about why. You know, I just went home and did what I had to do. I really never thought about why. I did wish it was different, but I didn't have time to worry about why. I still did some of the things, you know. I went to I was go out to the club, could barely see all those lights, but I had a good time. I look back on some of the craziest things, but you know, I still resumed my life, pretended like it didn't exist for a long time, which was not good looking back. But I think it was my way of coping with the situation.
Let me ask you this, because as you say, going out to club and stuff, in terms of your social life and friends you had as you was losing your sight and after you losing your sight, how did they treat you, and did you still keep some of the same social circle before, during, and after?
Yes, actually I did. Yes, I did. Afterwards, unbeknownst to me, I found out later on, while I was pretending I could see, they already know that I couldn't see that well, but they just never said anything. And I found out later, I said, y'all knew? And I'm like, yeah, we knew. You couldn't see that, with the front, you know, whatever that was, or we had glided over, you know. And I'm like, wow. So they were really better friends than I thought, you know. While I'm faking or call myself faking, they already knew. So we would, like I said, I went out, but the only thing was that I never went out alone. I never went out alone. And when I finally did, it was the most freeing experience, you know, after training and such. When I did that,
yeah.
that was the best feeling in the world.
Wow. And we're going to get to that. But let me just ask this also. Did you ever drive or start driving at the time? Because it's one of the number one thing that people lose their sight later on in teenage or adult life is giving up their driver's license and that independence. So did you ever start driving or was driving?
That is the one thing that I wish I would have. I've never drove before. I always wanted me a Volkswagen Rabbit. But I never got the opportunity to drive. And it might be a good thing because I remember when I could see and I would get on those bumper cars at the carnival, I would be the one that's always going in the circle. So maybe it's a good thing. I don't know. But no, sir, I never got the opportunity to drive, and I wish I would have.
Okay.
Well,
now,
you know, something we rarely touch on for persons who have disability, blindness, or low vision, and that's mental health and blindness. What was your state of mind as your eyesight continued to change?
Very interesting. Now, you know, when you're in a situation, you're in it. But now that I look back on it, I think I was very self-conscious, very, very, very self-conscious about what I look like to people. Not physically, like am I looking at the person? Is my eyes darting around? So I would find myself trying to look like I see. I don't know if that even makes any sense.
It
made me very insecure and self-conscious in situations, you know, especially when I realized it's starting to become just a permanent thing. It's not what the doctor said, it might go away. I started to become very self-conscious around others.
Mm-hmm. Let me go back to you talked about having a little boy. How did you help your son understand, and your little sister too, because they're almost like siblings, to understand that your vision was limited? There were some things you could do and some things you couldn't.
Now, Sherry, my little sister Sherry, she knew. I never really had to explain, but I think she knew because I caught her one day throwing pennies on the ledge of one of our closets. Like, what are you doing? She said, this is where I get my wishes. And I'm like, what's your wish? And it still choked me up today. She said, I'm wishing that you can see again so we can do all the stuff we used to do. Woo.
Oh, wow.
I said,
My goodness.
So,
man,
my goodness. But she was just so sweetheart, and she's still my best little friend. Even though she's 30-something, and she's still my best little friend.
Right.
Now, my son Samuel, he was another person. Long as he had toys, Barney, and snacks,
life was good.
And mommy, he didn't even realize it until, and this is really something that I'll go back to it, but he didn't realize it until my person from Columbia Lighthouse came and gave me the white cane. And he asked, what is this for? And I said, I had to explain, you know, I'm legally blind. I can't see. He's like, when did that happen? So I explained to him that I've been like that the whole time. And he said, I never knew that, you know, because you did everything. You cook, you go out and everything. And he was a little grown by then when he could understand. And I said, you notice how we never really went out together by ourselves? And he said, yeah, but we always did. I said, that was the reason why. And it kind of bothered him for a minute until he realized that I was doing other things. And I wanted to just touch on when I see blind parents like Mr. Calloway or other blind people, Miss Vicky, mm-hmm. had their grandchildren or little children out with them and they're totally blind. It makes me wish that I had those skills back then so I could take my son to the playground by ourselves or to McDonald's by ourselves. You know, we had indoor things if it was by ourselves, fake picnics, things of that nature, but I've never comfortably take them anywhere by ourselves just for our own time. And he was just like, wow.
Wow. When you told the story about the pennies, I just chills just all went off through my back. Just how poignant. That is such a poignant moment. I thank you for sharing that with us.
Question. It gives me chills that she even that thoughtful at that young age, because, you know, kids are selfish. But at that young age that she would be that sensitive. What type of work does she do now, today at 30? What does she do?
She is actually a nurse.
Yeah. Okay. That fits. Her compassion for that personality. Yeah, I would think she's in some type of field.
She's a nurse at Virginia Hospital Center.
Wow. So let me ask this, because you mentioned Columbia Lighthouse for the Blind. So when did finally someone or you came to you to let you know that there was an organization or service out there to give you some skills? How did that come about?
Well, years ago I went to my first out-of-town experience at Myrtle Beach, and this was with my son's family, my boyfriend's family, Sam. And they took me on vacation and left both Sams here. They said, you need a break from them Sams, right? So they took me on. I had never had anybody take me, just me on a vacation with, you know, it's his family, but they left him here, right? So we went to Myrtle Beach, and oh my gosh, that was my first time walking on the beach, and we went to all these places and restaurants, and it was just so fabulous. And when I was on my way home, I was changed. You know, I didn't want to just be in the same routine anymore. My little son had a beard. I think I told you he had a beard. I looked up and he had a beard. And I know I couldn't be a homemaker anymore. And I was coming home, and Sam's older brother, he said, you know, what are you going to do with the rest of your life? I'm like, I don't know, you know, what to do, you know. And when I got home, he had told me about Columbia Lighthouse, which I don't know why. Maybe he thought I already knew. I don't know why I never dawned on him. You know, I think everything is for its own time, okay, just like that trip.
Yeah.
And I came home, and I had the number for Columbia Lighthouse, and I called it. And the lady at the time, Miss Snyder, she said, hello. And I hung up on her. Click. Right? Because, you know, when you're getting out your comfort zone, it's nervous. You're nervous.
Yeah.
So the next day, I called again. She answered, click. Third day, I called again, and she answered. And I got enough nerve to ask her, what do they do for blind people? And she said, well, we can teach you computer training, we can do this and that. I was like, how can a blind person use a computer? And that's when she expressed to me that she was blind and she was on her computer. And I was like, wow, you know, I never heard about a white cane or mobility. I definitely didn't, when the person came, they sent the person to start me on mobility in my neighborhood. And when I saw that white cane, I knew I was not using that. I did not want anyone to see me with that white cane. That's out. So when he left, it went up. Yeah, that was out. But when I went to the fab class, that you had to go to a location, and you had to use
let me,
your
let,
cane.
Excuse me. Let me come back to you. That's the music. Got to pay some bills, and we're going to come back on the other side. Your experience, because I understand that cane. For a long time, I wouldn't use that cane, but I understand the stigma there. So we'll come back on the other side after our break with Miss Libra Robinson. All righty.
You are listening to Sight and Vision, Disability and Senior Talk Radio. We are heard here every Friday at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Back to Reverend Ray and our special guest, Libra Robinson, mom, entrepreneur, and blindness is only one aspect of this woman that we are highlighting today.
Okay, so Libra, so Columbia Lighthouse for the Blind sent an orientation person out to teach you cane travel. And how did you feel? Did they blindfold you? Say you had some vision. So did they blindfold you, or they allowed you to use your vision? And which is, what was your first experience? I know the cane is a stigma, but what was your first experience in using it? And did they use shades or blindfold for you?
No, they did not use shades or blindfolds. My first experience was just walking up and down my block around the corner. Mm-hmm. I was like, whoa, this is a nice neighborhood. Never been this way. it was something. It was like an experience where I cannot not do this again, but the cane is the problem, right? But I got to learn my neighborhood, and I never forget. I know I've said this before, but when I had to finally do my last challenge with going to the different stores and locations, the first time I was putting on my shoes and putting on his shoes, put on my jacket, he put on his jacket. Where are you going? They told me I have to do it by myself. He says, nope, you're not doing it by yourself. I'm like, okay, I have to do it by myself. But he let me go do it by myself. But when I got up to the store I was supposed to meet my mobility specialist at, he was there. I'm like, how did you get past my mobility specialist? Thing? He was following you the whole time, but it's okay. After that experience, he never did that again, because by him seeing that I could do it, he felt comfortable too, you see.
Mm-hmm.
But I always say my best experience is going to get my Pepsi at 7-Eleven. When I opened up that door and I went to the Pepsi that paid for it all by my lonesome, it was over. I didn't care who saw me in a white cane. I could walk around by myself.
We tell that story all the time of me and Mr. Renee with other incidents. We tell that story. So when did you accept the cane? When did you finally say, okay, this is going to give me the independence I need, so I have to, change my mindset on this?
That would be during my FAB class. It was the first FAB. It was a program that Columbia Lighthouse conducted, and I'll never forget when I started, February 6, 2012, and it was six of us in class, which I was very fascinated with. Where all these blind people come from? I never seen y'all. during that 2-week program, I walked all around on 9th and O Street, 9th and P. I was just walking with this white cane that really assisted me in being comfortable walking. You know, I never was a person to hold on to a person, but, you know, when you can't see, it's funny when you're trying to walk, but the cane gave me the confidence to do so. And I think what really stuck is when I expressed to my mobility specialist, what if someone, I know people in D.C., what if somebody see me with this white cane? He told me, you can't see them seeing you with the white cane, so don't worry about it. And I said, yeah, you're right, you know. And it is a tool to help me to get around. It shouldn't be something that I was ashamed of. And I think that's the word I was looking for earlier when I said uncomfortable. I was ashamed of being blind and visually impaired. Like, I did it. I felt funny about it. But with the white cane, I felt more confident that I could maneuver and move around. And I just felt this confidence about it. After that 2-week program, it was over for me. I was gone. I used my cane to go anywhere. Metro Access, never heard of it. got on that. It was another part of my life that just started in your life.
So let me ask you this about the fad. But Renee, let me just ask this about the FAD program. Now you already was taking care of your son and your baby sister and doing things for them like laundry, like cooking, like cleaning. Now the FAD program mm-hmm. teach you a little bit of all of that. Now did that assist you with different type of ways to do stuff or enhance to give you more independence or what? What did the FAD program do for you in terms of you was already doing these things?
Well, I would say especially the mobility was the main part. But far as the domestic okay. stuff, it really helped me to learn how to cook safer on the stove.
Okay.
I didn't cut up a lot of stuff a lot, you know. But they showed me the correct way of cutting up things because they make you cut up a lot of stuff, onions, green peppers, everything.
Yeah.
Because the beautiful part about it was that you had to make your own lunch. I remember when they said, you know, we had lunch at 12. I was like, ooh, that's good. And then they said, here you go. Like, what's this? All the stuff you need for y'all to make your own lunch. I'm like, come on.
You thought they were serving lunch, right?
Yeah, this part, I thought that was part, lunch was part of the program. I was like, oh, great, right?
but it
gave us a chance to really make stuff, you know, work together as a team and from scratch, you know. I'll juice up a box of anything, and you'll think it's homemade, but this stuff was from scratch, you know.
Yeah.
And it really gave me the confidence to do more in the kitchen, be more safer, how to find where the spoon if you're in a gathering without having someone to serve you, knowing how much weight is on the spoon so you know you won't overflow your plate. Those little things, touching your middle of your glass to make sure it's not overflowing. Just those little things. If you have a lot of food on your plate, using the bread as a pusher so you won't have to put your hands in your plate trying to scoop the stuff on the fork.
Right.
So those type of not only cooking but being out in public environment and eating type of things help. Because, you know, as blind, visually impaired people, you're very self-conscious about eating in front of people because you don't want to look messy.
Right, right. Oh, okay. All right. Go, Ms. Relay.
Well, we're going to change the subject a little bit. I want to ask you, you talked about someone answering the phone when you first called Columbia Lighthouse for the Blind. What role did technology play in your adjustment to blindness?
Oh, well, they signed me up for a computer class. And the computer, well, first of all, I never used a computer before I went blind. So, okay, unless it was Nintendo or Atari, something like that. But they signed me up for this computer class. And at that time, they were teaching it at the RSA building. And I had a wonderful, wonderful instructor, Mr. Mel Demisay. And he put me on talking typer, and I was fascinating. And once my brain gets locked on something, it's like on. I was typing him to death. I was type. Once I learned it, it was so fascinating. And I think the one thing that really changed me as far as technology is when we had to go to this one site where I had to use my navigation skills, you know, Mr. Reverend Ray Razor, up and down arrow, this, that, and other to read using JAWS. And I read this story about, what's his name? I don't know, someone, the man in Florida, I forgot his name. Anyway, so I was reading this story, and I think my face must have changed because he asked me what was wrong. And I said, I haven't read in years. And I was an avid reader, you know. I was the little kid that when Riff Reading Fundamentals came around, I really got a book. I didn't get sicker. I really bought a book. And I expressed to him that I hadn't read in years. And he turned off the computer. And the next lesson, we went to the Martin Luther King Library, and he got me an NLS player, you know, that with the cartridges that read the books. And that piece of technology just really, along with the computer class, but that piece of technology really made me start to not feel so bad about my visual impairment because I could read again. I couldn't believe it.
Wow. Right. Now, you went from utilizing technology to birthing your own technology enterprise, and we want to talk a little bit about that. How did you become an entrepreneur and birthing your own business in sight?
Ooh, well, it really came from two things. One, I received these computer trainings and things of that nature. But I'm going to back up. That same year, 2012, I had gone to my first National Federation of the Blind meeting here in D.C., and there were a whole room for other blind people, and I was like, "Are these people coming from?" You know. As I joined the organization, I would ask people, "Oh, do you know how to use JAWS? You know how to do?" And they would look at me like, "What are you talking about?" Or I would say, "You need to go to RSA, and they'll do this." But when they went, their experience was so different. They were waiting and, you know, trying to get the same things that I was getting. And I found that I didn't like that too much. I found out about this place called Project Reboot. And I asked our president at the time, could he get referral forms? And we started giving those out. But then I gave out all the referral forms, and people were like, "Now what? We still don't know how to use the computer." So I wasn't working or doing anything. At that time, my whole day, my son was grown. My whole day was filled with good times and all my children, okay? So what I started doing was I would tell them to call me, and I'll show them. I can hear what you're doing over the phone, and I'll show you this, and I'll show you that. And it became like just a help type of thing. Also, another catalyst was, you, Mr. Reverend Ray Razor, I remember you said you do JAWS. You know you can teach that. If you try to, you know, you always try to have in our community people that were entrepreneurs or trying to do something for themselves, you know. And I never thought of it in that way. So you actually put that in my brain. And you spoke earlier about having a little snippets on the radio show. Who would do that for someone who hasn't had, you know, broadcasting experience and stuff? So you really paved the way for myself and I think a few others to really open your mind to what could happen and open your horizon. Mm-hmm. And I think with him, people like him in our organization or just around and just people that don't know things, you're supposed to try to help others. I think that's where it all started from.
Okay, well, you certainly turned it into something special. And then, so you was helping people, and then when did you realize it could become that you could monetize it to become a business? When did that cross your mind that, hey, wait a minute, you know, I'm doing this, I'm not listening to all my children and them anymore, and I'm doing all this. Now, how can I monetize this? I mean, when and come up with a business plan and turn this into being a black-owned woman business? When did that come to you?
Well, I actually...
Can we get her answer on the other side of the break?
Yeah, okay, we're going to take a break, and you think about that and let us know how you became, how that entrepreneurial spirit hit you, because entrepreneurs are special people. So we're going to come back on and see how that came out of you. All right, well, we went Miss Libra Robinson. All right, Miss Renee.
You are listening to Sight and Vision Disability and Senior Talk Radio. We are heard here every Friday at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Our guest Libra Robinson, went from utilizing technology to birthing her own technology enterprise. Back to you, Reverend Ray and Miss Libra, so we can find out, how did she go from cane travel to entrepreneurship?
Yes. So, Libra, how did it come to you, or somebody say, hey, Libra, you know, instead of doing this tree, man, you can, you know, make this a career. You could start your own business. I mean, how did that thought come across to you?
Okay, so I had a couple of people say that I should start charging the people that I help. Now, that didn't feel right to me, because I knew that I was on a fixed income. Most of the people that I knew were, and I just didn't feel right with doing that. I had a gentleman, Mr. Gerald Barnes, who told me about LLCs and how to create a business in order to monetize what you can do. So what I did was, once he told me about it, I'm a person that I look up what I want to know. So they say you need a business plan, you need a proposal, you need this. And I would ask different people, and I had, God would put people right in where you need to be. I was actually in a cab, one of the transport DC cabs, and it was a gentleman who just started his business, and I was telling him that what I wanted to do, and I said, I need a business plan. But they say business, I was looking it up, business plan is going to charge you like $2,000 just to create your plan. And you know what he told me? I forgot, I think he was from Ethiopia. He said, do you know what you want to do? I said, yeah. He said, then you have the plan. He said, you don't have to pay anybody. He told me to Google basic business plans, read it, and fill in what I would like as my own business plan. And I did that. Business proposals, same thing. Read up, you know, go and get the template and read what it is. Also, read what it means to be an entrepreneur, what it means to have a business. One thing that was very important that someone told me, what if you're going to create a business, how many people around are doing the same thing, and what would be the benefit of them or others going to your business? You know, they gave me an example of, if you bake cakes and there's 25 other places around you that bake cakes, what's going to be special about your cake? You see? So
right.
I looked into all that, and I studied, you know, I studied that stuff. I took the JAWS training online course, and I, you know, it took me over a year to get all of this together, because I don't believe in jumping into anything. And I didn't do it for monetary reasons in the first place. I did it to help people that going to organizations and businesses as a business would be more professional than just saying I can do it. And that was the reason why I really did it.
Wow.
But let
and
me
then
ask
you started.
You a question. Oh.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead,
Rev. No, go ahead, Ms. Renner. No, then I was going to ask you then, how did you finally market yourself where now in the visual, well, what, so now you know, get employed? Are you employed by organizations or is it a consultant? Or how is your business translate into providing services for individuals?
Okay, so the first thing I did was I was already a consumer of the DC Center for Independent Living, and they wanted me to start to teach computer class with JAWS. But one of the counselors there said, you know, and here it goes again, if you become a business, then you can be a consultant and get paid for doing it. Now, remember, somebody just told me that. Mr. Raven told me that, da-da-da. So, you know, when you hear it more than four or five times, you know you have to really get on the good foot, you know. So once I did that, I said, well, I'm going to use that place as my first place. I'm going to put in a proposal. And I put in my proposal. Like I said, I looked up a regular proposal letter on, and I still have that letter, and I filled in my own blank. Got someone to proofread to make sure it looks professional. I submitted it, They accepted, but they asked me, do you think you can get the clientele? Now, one thing I've learned, and I don't have to be a businesswoman to know this, but this is common sense. If you have things right in front of you, you don't go out looking for it. I'm part of an organization where blind people I meet every month. So all I had to do was announce it in the meeting, and before you know it, that whole place is filled with blind people trying to get services, you know? Why advertise at the Giant when you're right there with all the people that need it, you know?
People have to wait. People have to wait now. They're in the waiting line now for to get your services. Go ahead, Ms. Renee.
Well, you know, a lot of people, and this is a fascinating how this evolved. So many people think I'm not in the workforce any longer. Excuse me, I'm not doing. I don't need it for educational purposes. Why is tech so important for the blind and low vision community?
It is just important because that's what the world is now. You know, that is, I mean, I knew that that was the truth when I went to CVS and I'm waiting to purchase, you know, to pay for my CoverGirl mascara, and I'm just standing there and it wasn't a real person there. They was like, no, ma'am, it's a machine. A machine? So, you know. So it's like everything is technology. In order to, you know, just, you know, I have a lot of people, like you said, it's not even the workforce, but they still want to shop online. They still want to look at movies. They still want to do all the things that other people can do on their computers. It's not all about working. And that's the one thing that I try to stipulate with my, you know, I'm a contractor for a couple of people now, that I know that the priority is supposed to be for the goal is to go back to work. But what about these people that have already retired? They don't deserve services, you know. So one of the stipulations that I do have is that I will teach seniors. You know, a lot of times they'll push the seniors to the side, especially if you're retired or you don't want to work, and they'll have to wait for services. But no, I don't do that.
And I think that is so important to say that. Reverend Ray and I were during COVID were at a restaurant where you could not go inside, and you had to use a QR code. And we stood out there so long that the owner finally came out to take our order because we couldn't use the QR code. And for those of you who are non-visual, it's a little square with a lot of it's a square with a lot of little squiggles in it, and you're supposed to be able to use that to communicate different things, get tickets, order in restaurants, et cetera, et cetera. But here again, because we are not in the workforce, you know, we technically wouldn't qualify for a technical training. So I'm so glad that you answered that question that way, because the world is technical and it is moving in that direction. Mm-hmm. And none of us want to be left. Can you tell us a little bit about, because we're running close to time, a little bit about Inside AIDS and products?
Okay.
Insight. I think I said Insight. Insight.
Insight. So Insight is the name of my business, but I have Insight AIDS and products. And there used to be a store in Silver Spring called White Cane and More Store. Everybody, including myself, went to that store to get equipment, you know, for blind, visually impaired persons. And that store closed down, right? Now, there are different ways that you can get other, you know, equipment, but most people are used to that. And that same year, I was the proud recipient of the Dr. Balotin Award from the National Federation of the Blind, which I, you know, for the services that I render in my community. And I was awarded $5,000 for that, which I was so surprised, and I still have my little award up here. But instead of going shopping and getting fabulous bags and shoes, because you know I do like it, but I used that money to invest in an online store. And, you know, when you have an online store, you have to have a distributor. and without any kind of capital or, you know, money, you know, you won't get that line of credit because, you know, you have to pay for the stuff before the person or, you know, after the person orders it. So I used that money mm-hmm. and put it on a card, and I applied to be to the distributor, was accepted, and voila, I created Insight Aids and Products. And on this online store, I sell everything for blind and visually impaired people, including seniors, and I created different categories such as fun and games, health aids, visual, non-visual aids, canes, watches, brailling aids, anything that a blind or visually impaired person or senior would need, because sometimes you don't have to be blind to use a magnifier. Everybody in here steals my magnifier, even though I don't use them. But, you know, so, yeah, and so it came out of that store closing and people just wanting to be able to access, you know, get the things that they need. And I used that money for that.
And a testimony came back to, and a, well, let me just say this, Ms. Ray, and a testimony came back to me because one of my associates that was given money, that's going to be a secretary, one of our groups was given money to buy a Victor screen at George Brooks. And she went and said, I went to Libra and bought it. And it was just wonderful, her service, her attitude. Mm. And say, Reverend Ray, it was just wonderful. Purchasing, you know, from her. So I just want to let you know that one satisfied customer, and she ain't easy, and she not easy to be satisfied. So I wanted to let you know that.
Well, again, the time marches on and waits for no person. Libra, how can someone get in touch with Insight, and that's N'SIGHT, Aids and Products. How can we get in touch with you?
Okay, so what you can do is you can go to my website, which is N, the letter N, apostrophe S-I-G-H-T, VIPservices.com. And on that website is a link called Storefront. And you can click on that Storefront link, and you can then purchase your look through the items. If you don't see anything you like, there is a calling number that you can use. But you can purchase your items directly from the website, pay for it through PayPal directly through the website, and it'll get shipped to you. If you do not have PayPal, then you can call that number that's on the website, and we will work with you if you need to do money order, if you're just unsure on how to use your credit card. We've done that as well. And there's other information on there about the different trainings we have, because I do do some out-of-pocket trainings, like I've trained people in South Carolina and New York and things of that nature. So there's some out-of-pocket training in there, as well as any information you might need to contact me.
And let me ask you this. For some people listening, blind people that's probably thinking about starting a business, how did you create your website?
Oh, well, what I did was I researched. I went through GoDaddy, and I got them to help me to put it together. But then I also have someone who monitors it for me, you know, just to make sure it looks good. And I'm powered by Wheatley. So I just created it. You know, I just put what I wanted on it. You know, not a lot of bells and whistles. I'm going to start to use it up a little bit more now, but just basically doing it on my own. Research is the key.
Wow.
And taking your time.
Okay.
You know, don't, if you want to be an entrepreneur, don't jump into it. Really research. Take your time.
Okay, well, then that's a golden nugget that you left us with. And Libra, thank you so much, and I am so proud of you. Thank you. How time fly. I mean, it's been 10 years since 11 years since we known you, and 10 years since he was on the radio. How time fly. But you have done a lot with your life, and we look forward to, well, you know I'm always calling you for something, try to rope you into something, and that won't be over with. But anyway, thank you so much, Libra, and this is going to be reported, going to be on our website, and we will send you a call. All right? So God bless.